Hello, welcome to one of the last episodes in the series of the Gita Decoded. It's great having you here with us in the studio. Sister Denise and I will be covering the subject of themes in this episode. If you have read the Bhagavad Gita, you'll note that throughout this book, there has been a number of themes or common threads that have made its appearance chapter after chapter. So we will look at that aspect in this episode. Sister Denise, it's great to have you with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Now, Sister Denise, if one looks at chapter 1 of the Bhagavad Gita up until chapter 18, we notice that there are repetitions as far as certain ideas are concerned. Why would you say this is the case? And the reason I ask this is because I'd like to know what the significance is of saying something more than once within the Gita. There must be a reason for the tautology, if you will.
You know, the Gita is one of these scriptures that are called eponymous, which means that there are several people who have added to it. And of course, nobody knows exactly what, but it is said that originally the Gita was practically just one line and that it's been amplified, and there are many, many versions of the Gita that you can find. In some people say there are 14 different Gitas, so we're working with one. So that's one of the reasons. And the second reason is because the same idea is taken up from different angles. And so that helps us to understand the idea better because of looking at it from different angles or in more detail. And also you can see there are really several different systems of thought all included in the Gita, which are not necessarily in correspondence with each other. And you see in Hindu culture in general, there are many, many different threads, and no one can really say what is the conclusive right form of Hinduism. So all these different schools of thoughts do get representation in the Gita. But I think the ultimate message is practice detachment, be very aware of the laws of karma, aim to be free, sattvic, and stay in remembrance of God. Basically, it's as simple as that.
Could you repeat that for the viewer, Sister Denise? It's so, to so powerfully put, I think it, I think it should be said twice.
Well, the Gita is saying you have to practice detachment because attachment is the big problem. Then it says you must aim to be sattvic. Sattvic means pure of the three gunas, sattvic, rajasic, tamasic. So try to be pure, try to be free. The aim of spiritual practice is freedom because, of course, attachment means you're in bondage. And people love to tie themselves up and then it becomes difficult to untie yourself. So don't tie up in the first place. And all of this is accomplished through remembrance of God. And then stay in remembrance of God, and this is going to set you free.
Wow. So, okay, Sister Denise, I'm now going to take you through the themes that I've discovered, and there are more than this. This is not a closed list, but this is what I picked up having read it and having listened to your answers from the commencement of the series. The first one that I noted is ignorance versus knowledge.
Yeah, ignorance and knowledge are spoken about a lot. So gyan and agyan, and then there's another expression which is vigyan. And in the version that we're looking at here, vigyan is translated as discrimination, but it is also like metaphysics, that which is beyond physical knowledge. Ignorance is really to do with materialism. Ignorant people are those who think they are bodies, and they're not. Ignorant people are those who can't understand God, even if you explain everything very clearly, they don't get it. Ignorant people are hedonists, and whatever they do is harmful to themselves and harmful to everybody else, and I would say the environment as well. So ignorance is considered a really bad thing. And God is portrayed as the giver of knowledge. And so if you study with God, listen to God, then your ignorance will be displaced by clarity, wisdom, understanding, and then your behavior, your karma, your attitude, your approach to life will be filled with a deep understanding and wisdom.
The next one that I came across is delusion versus wisdom.
I think this is almost the same as what we just saw, but in different expression. So you have wisdom, but the delusion, you know, the word is maya. And a person who really believes something is something or is right, they're deluded. They don't get it, that it's really not. So we need to be undeluded. We have this expression that one of the most painful things or unpleasant experiences one can have is the feeling of disillusionment. But if you're operating under an illusion, then you are deluded. And then I very often in classes, I'll ask people, is it better to live under an illusion, or is it better to be disillusioned? Because if you're disillusioned, then you're clear. You're not operating under any illusion. The problem is the feeling when all your illusions come crashing to the ground is a very unpleasant feeling. And I think one of the themes that we have in the Gita is being able to have enough strength, enough stability of mind and equanimity to manage the feelings of disillusionment. Because otherwise people react very strongly to that.
You mentioned this earlier, but I'd like to take it up again. The power of discrimination comes up. Sister Denise, the reason this is of interest to me is that the word discrimination in secular society has been given a bad rap.
It has.
Poor word, because it's got nothing to do with that in the context of the Bhagavad Gita, does it?
That's right. Well, you know, if you have, you know, if you discriminate people on the basis of race, gender, political orientation, sexual orientation, whatever, that is a form of discrimination that is wrong. You can say. So the real word discrimination, the real meaning of the word discrimination is that you can tell the difference. And sometimes instead of the word discrimination, we'll use the word discernment. If you're very able to discern good character, if you're able to discern right from wrong, but the real word is discriminate. It's one of the powers. You know, in Brahma Kumari's form of Raj Yoga, we learn about eight powers, of which one of them is the power of discrimination. And if you're able to distinguish one thing from another, this is a very important key to wisdom. So you want to be a discriminating person, a discerning person, someone who is really able to tell what's what. Then you will not be deluded.
The next thing that came to mind is how to be versus how to do. That comes up time and time again. And it's very curious because one doesn't easily receive this lesson elsewhere as to how to be in a particular situation.
That's right. And I think part of it is because of in our culture, a lot of importance is given to the Rajasic way of life.
I'm so sorry, Sister Denise. When you say our culture, you mean
Western culture.
Western culture. Okay. Yeah.
In a way, it's global. the thing that we call Western civilization, which is very global, it gives importance to what you're doing and why you're doing it and what you're going to get out of doing it. Mm. Being doesn't come up much because people are very materialistic. But in the Bhagavad Gita, you're looking at, are you going to be a pure type of person, a passionate type of person, rajasic type of person, or a very dull, impure kind of person? Because depending on the kind of person you are, so will be your deeds, such will be your experience of life, such will be your impact in society and on the world. So how to be is given a lot of importance. And it's all talking about your virtues, your inner qualities. It's talking about turning your attention within. It's talking about existing in a state of spiritual awareness, being spiritually awake, living in communion with God, in relationship with God. All of this is nothing to do with action, external action, but it's really a state of being, which is the precursor to very good action. If your state of being is not very good and you try to do good action, it's very difficult. And so this is why I think we give maximum importance to developing what does it mean to be. And when you meditate, you're really meditating on your original inner qualities, which correspond to the state of being that is God's state of being. So then when you're in that, you can be with God very easily.
Yes, as you speak, the thought that crosses my mind is, it doesn't make sense that you become, materially speaking, a successful individual who is filled with rage. And yet, so many of us have the internal war that is described in the Bhagavad Gita, and we don't even know about it. All we focus on is what I've achieved on the outside.
Yes, exactly. And of course it's going to be short-lived, and it's going to come crashing down because you'll be doing a lot of negative karma, which will come up, and it brings suffering.
Sister Denise, the next aspect that I'd like to take up is that which was contained largely in the last chapter, which is choices versus predestiny. And, we heard it said that Arjuna has no choice, and then a couple stanzas later, my son, the choice is yours. So that made me smile, and ironically, both are true, you know?
It's very paradoxical, and I think that actually when you think about spirituality in a general way, it is full of paradox. We have to really understand what are the forces operating on us. There is destiny, there is the force of negativity, which is all around and which has an influence on us. But what it says in the Bhagavad Gita is that if you can make yourself really pure and stay really close to God and you understand everything, then you gain the power and the right to decide absolutely freely. And that is, I think, what people who love freedom really aspire to.
Sister Denise, the next one, which is a big deal for many, many people, whether you're spiritual or not, mortality versus immortality.
The description of immortality doesn't mean that you will stay in this body forever like some sort of vampire. It's a different thing altogether. Immortality is more like a person who creates within themselves the power and the ability and the right to decide when to leave their body. So immortality also refers to a state of being which is very pure and which corresponds to a life where, you know, what we call the human condition, where you're just under the impact of your mortality, your fragility, your human failings and all that. So the immortal person corresponds to, you know, the hero, the god with a little g, god, goddesses, those who are really in touch with their spirit and are operating as spiritual beings. So that for such a person, death is an act like any other, and they freely move from one body to another according to, you know, their relationship with destiny is very harmonious, and they're not struggling. This is an immortal person.
As you speak, Sister Denise, what comes to mind about somebody who is aware of their immortality is absence of fear, and that is a big deal. It's a very big deal, because there's a handful on the planet who are not afraid to die.
Well, that's right. And that's because people are in body consciousness. They don't know what death is. They don't know, you know, it is said that one who knows how to die, he knows how to live.
I feel so inclined to do an episode on that topic alone, but we will leave that for another series, shall we? Okay, Sister Denise, I'd now like to take you to the subject of celibacy. This is a subject that people tend to shy away from, don't they?
Well, of course, because the species has to carry on.
Yeah.
And I think it comes up in most of the religions that if you want to be spiritual, you need to be celibate, but you can't be celibate because if you are, you'll die out. So what to do?
Yes.
And I think that, of course, in every tradition, there are a few who decide to live a monastic life. And in the Brahma Kumaris, we give a lot of importance to celibacy because we feel that if you want to have, you know, a complete capacity to relate to God and enjoy being with God, living with God, having all relationships with God, then you don't want to divide your attention between God on the one hand and someone else on the other hand. So also the thing about celibacy is that celibacy means that you're consistently bringing yourself further and further away from the consciousness of the body. If you're not celibate, then everything is about the pleasures of the flesh. Pleasures of the flesh are, according to spiritual wisdom, going to tie you in bondage. You know, there is one very well-known Indian scripture called the Kama Sutra, which is all about the bondages of lust. And so a lot of people enjoy that, but if you want to be free, well, it's not going to work. You can't be in bondage and free at the same time.
Okay, Sister Denise, the next subject is eternal liberation versus rebirth. This subject encroaches upon mortality versus immortality, but yet it's a separate subject, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. You know, as I mentioned before, in the Gita you can definitely see different philosophies coexisting. And one of the philosophies, which is usually, I think, called the Vedanta philosophy, the idea here is that human birth is a misfortune. And you have been reincarnating, you've reached this point, it is a birth where there is suffering, there is bondage, and so on. And your spiritual practice is all about trying to come out of the wheel of birth and rebirth, return to the world of nirvana, and stay there and not come back. Then there is another view which says that you are in the wheel of birth and rebirth, and this wheel has a point where there is a return to the world of light, a return to God, with God. And this is something that is mentioned really in the last chapter, that you can take rebirth in the happy world. And so this is something that Brahma Kumaris do subscribe to, that we want we have two goals, two destinations. One is to return to nirvana in a state of absolute purity, freedom from karmic bondages and everything like this. But the other is that during this period of time, which we call the auspicious confluence age or Purushottam Sangam Yuga, it is a time where you can actually have really very high level karma. You can interact with God and have karma with God and create such a karma that you will come again onto the earth during the period of time that is called the Satyuga, the Age of Truth, or the Golden Age. And so we would think that you don't want to miss that. That's very interesting, to live at such a time.
Okay, Sister Denise, the next one that I want to go to is the war against falsehood. This war that is the reason for the conversation between Arjuna and Sri Krishna is one of fascination to me, because it's a war on so many levels.
Yes.
But the most interesting aspect of that to me is the internal war, not the external. Okay, because there are those who will be participating in the external war, but I think most people who read the Bhagavad Gita, their interest is in the internal war.
Exactly.
And that is the war against falsehood, isn't it?
It's really all about your consciousness. We have the expression, deha abhiman, dehi abhiman, pride of the body, which is false consciousness, pride of that which is beyond the body, which is the spirit, that is a true consciousness. And it's very slippery which consciousness you're in at any given time, because mostly we are in body consciousness, material consciousness, and we would like to be in spiritual consciousness, and sometimes we imagine that we are, but it's very subtle, it's very refined, and it requires a lot of meditation to develop it, sustain it, and keep it at a certain high level, which is characterized by detachment, by purity, by many, many virtues, dispassionate in the face of all the different pairs of opposites and so on. And you know very well how people can be taken off guard, and then they will have an emotional reaction to something which otherwise, if they would be stable in their spiritual practice, they would be just very neutral about.
Sister Denise, unfortunately, we have come to the end of this episode. I have a lot more themes for you, but we will have to leave it for the next episode. It's interesting that although we've taken this up in the various chapters, there's still so much to be said, and each subject on its own has so much of depth to it that we can talk about actually one pair of opposites for an entire half hour, can't we?
We can.
This is the depth of the Gita, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. So, Sister Denise, thank you so much for what you've shared in this half hour. It's been very educational for myself as well as the viewers at home. And there you go. What I find interesting about what Sister Denise is doing in this episode is that we are looking at the Bhagavad Gita not just as what is contained in chapter versus chapter, but we're looking at the dualities, the commonalities that are contained, things like ignorance versus knowledge. And if one could use a a line and ask oneself, where do I fit in? How would I describe myself? Am I ignorant of spiritual principles or am I a knowledgeable person? We can do that with every single subject that has been taken up today. So I like what Sister Denise shared as to how deep one can go when understanding this magnificent scripture. So thank you for lending us your ear, and thank you, Sister Denise, and I do hope to see you soon. Do take care and goodbye.